Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Down goes Duffy on cold. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bulls.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Headshot, bang!
All right, folks, 10 days out, Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. It is episode 479 of the Anik and Florian podcast, Kenflo UFC 300, 10 days away. 10 days away. You excited to see me or what?
Always, dude. Yeah. That's crazy, man. I'm excited for that card, dude.
10 days out. From UFC 300. So Kenny doesn't know we're doing this exercise today, or at least he doesn't know precisely what we're doing, but we're going to go through some of the fights at UFC 300, Pineda versus Hill. And he's just going to tell me who he thinks is favored to win that fight. Some of these fights obviously are closer than others. And then coming up later in the program, in about a quarter of an hour, we will devote our attention to the UFC fight night coming up at the Apex this weekend. It's been obviously a crazy stretch back to back to back to back, you know, double-digit back-to-back weekends for the UFC with live events, but UFC 300 is cannonball coming. So, Kenny, we're going to start at the top of the card and ease you in softly. I know sometimes this can be a tricky exercise, but the first fight of the night at UFC 300, as it is scheduled now, in the bantamweight division, Davison Figueroa and Cody Garbrandt, who's the betting favorite?
I would say Figueroa is.
Well, thankfully, Circle gets the square and you started 1-0. Yeah, Figgy's one of the bigger betting favorites on this fight card, top to bottom, wow. minus 340. Cody wow. No Love Garbrandt is plus 270. All right, next prelim at lightweight, King Green, formerly Bobby, but his name's actually King Green now. So King Green minus, I just fucked it up. Well, King maybe Green's it's a favorite. Pick him. Yeah, Bobby Green's favorite over Jim Miller, Kenny. Did you think that that would be the case, or did you think Jim would be favored? Fuck!
Yeah, I probably would have known that anyway. Yeah.
All right, Bobby Green, minus 170, Jim Miller, plus 142. All right, next up in the women's strawweight division, Marina Rodriguez and Jessica Andrade.
Okay, so that's a tough one. I mean, a lot of these are really close matchups. I would be leaning towards Andrade. Perhaps just because of the takedown game and stuff, but what do you got?
Marina Rodriguez minus 122, Jessica Andrade plus 102.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Next early prelim, all of these live on ESPN in the lightweight division, Renato Moicano versus Jalen Turner. Who's the betting favorite?
Turner is the favorite?
Yeah, he is. Minus 225, Renato Moicano plus 185. All right, next up at featherweight, Kenflo, Diego Lopez versus Super Sadiq Youssef.
I'm going to say Lopez is the favorite. Lopez.
One of the closest fights on the card, Diego Lopez minus 125, Sadiq Youssef plus 105. All right, next up in the bantamweight division, Kayla Harrison, Holly Holm.
I'd say Kayla is probably the favorite.
Kayla is the second biggest betting favorite on the card, minus 500. Holly Holm is plus 340. 78% of the bets right now are on Kayla Harrison. I mean, can some bettor out there with a fat bankroll, like, put down a straight wager on Holly Holm and put some respect on her name? Like, right. I mean, Kayla Harrison deserves everything that comes her way. I mean, elite human being, great person, great athlete, yeah. Right? But isn't that a prohibitive number, minus 500 next to her name in her UFC debut? We don't know how she's going to handle the weight cut. She looks fantastic if Instagram is an indicator. But, like, I understand Holly Holm is 40 years of age or something close to it. But no? Plus 340? Am I crazy?
Well, it's hard to, discount all of that experience as well, right? Man, Kayla gets a hold of you, dude. I mean, she's tossing everyone who's probably been on this podcast. she gets a hold of you. You're going for a ride. She's an absolute beast. I'm even a little bit surprised by just the huge disparity in the odds there as well.
All right, next prelim in the men's featherweight division, Aljamain Sterling versus Calvin Kattar.
Ooh. This is interesting. I would say Aljo's probably the slight favorite.
Look at this guy. I mean, would you like to be a handicapper in your next life?
I would be terrible at that, I think.
But I guess an odds maker would be the better description. Aljamain Sterling minus 130. You're right. Slightly the betting favorite. Okay. Calvin Kattar comes back at plus 110. And then the feature prelim, light heavyweight division, Alexander Rokic versus Jiří Prochazka.
Ooh. Prochazka favorite?
Yeah, so I had this wrong as well. I had Prochazka minus 150. Prochazka is plus 114. Alexander Rokic is minus 135.
Wow. Interesting.
All right, that brings us to the pay-per-view main card in the middleweight division, Cody Brundage versus Bo Nickel.
I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, Bo's got to be one of the biggest favorites, if not the biggest favorite. Did you already say there was one that was?
Well, Kayla Harrison's minus 500. What do you think Bo Nickel is?
I mean, what? 700? Minus 700?
Oh, I mean, well, they'll just let you keep going. I know it doesn't make for great radio, but just keep going higher. You're saying minus 700?
Minus 800?
Keep going. I mean, you want to go minus 15? 17?
minus 2,000?
You want to go higher?
No way, dude.
You ever play this game with your kids? Higher? Hotter? All right, minus 1,800, I say it's higher than that.
Damn.
Do you have a guess? Yeah.
Okay, yeah, higher. There's a 2,000, dude?
Minus 2,400.
Are those the biggest odds?
No.
No, what's the biggest odds?
You mean like the biggest betting favorite in UFC history?
Yeah.
It might be. I think it's close to it.
Dude, that's
I don't know. So a $2,400 bet on Bo Nickel would return $100.
Oh, my
Cody goodness. Brundage is plus 1,200.
Wow.
So a $100 bet on Cody Brundage would pay you $1,200, but he's got to win the fight for you to cash that ticket. All right. Next up at lightweight, Armand Sarukyan versus Charles Dubronx Oliveira, Ken Flo.
Oof. I'm going to say Sarukyan is a slight favorite.
A little more than slight, minus 250, Charles Oliveira plus 205. All right, BMF title bout in the lightweight division, Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway. Who's the betting favorite?
I'm going to say Gaethje is probably the betting favorite.
Minus 230, Max Holloway is plus 190. All right, UFC strawweight championship. Zhang Weili and Yan Xiaonan. No huge surprise here, right?
Yeah, Zhang Weili's got to be the favorite here.
10 days out, highest percentage of bets on DraftKings Sportsbook, Zhang Weili, 96% of the handle. Whoa. She is the minus 375 betting favorite. Yan Xiaonan is plus 295. And I'm being told now by our esteemed producer, Cody Merrow, that Bo Nickel was minus 2,500 against Val Woodburn. So minus 2400. The price is shorter right now on DK Sportsbook. And finally, KenFlo, all roads will lead us to Alex Pineda versus Jamal Hill. And you know Alex's favor because we have talked about this, right?
Yeah.
But does it not speak to maybe just how good Jamal Hill is that Alex Pineda is only minus 130, just given that Jamal Hill is just, you know, 9-10 months removed from that invasive surgery for the torn Achilles? He's plus 110.
Absolutely. I think that that's a sign of respect. And also, I mean, it just makes sense because Jamal does have some serious knockout power, especially in regards to that boxing range. I think he throws the faster, straighter punches. I'm not sure he possesses the same amount of power, but I would not be surprised at all if Jamal Hill is able to pull that off.
Alex Pineda, we've talked about him as a massive MMA superstar. I just hope the Americans will get behind Jamal Hill a little bit. And he has a budding fan base in his own right. But it's hard for me to believe that any athlete right now could be the crowd favorite against Alex Pineda in almost any venue in the world. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. Jamal Hill and Alex Pineda, remarkably 10 days out at UFC 300. Well, right now, the thrill and excitement of March Mania continues, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. We have now arrived at the last four standing, and for our listeners and viewers in North Carolina, for whom DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state, we told you last week, NC State, at that point in time, was the biggest remaining underdog long shot to win it all. They were 90-1. Wolfpack still breathing, still alive. They now face Purdue as 9-point underdogs coming up this weekend. And of course, also on DraftKings this weekend, all of the offerings for UFC Fight Night, Allen versus Curtis 2. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Not now, but right now, use promo code AFPOD. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code AFPOD. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt sip smell routine, or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, time to spin this thing forward as we go three wide and welcome on Brian Petrie, host of the MMA Takes podcast. And there is one thing that I do want to get to with BP before we immediately spin things forward. How are you, Bri?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Well, health is wealth. I guess I'm doing okay today. I mean, sure. I'm starting to feel 45. Kenny, I don't know what he's fucking taking to look so young, but it's not funny.
I sit on a needle every once in a while. Okay. You know,
and I'll do it.
Things get placed. Yeah.
So Aaron Blanchfield and Manon Fiorot, mm-hmm. I'm not here to defend the main event. I'm not here to bash the main event. Maybe I say some not nice things in a group text to you guys every now and again. But how do you quantify this, Bri, as a setback for Aaron Blanchfield and where her ceiling is for you at 24 years of age relative to maybe where it was going into that first UFC main event?
Sure. I mean, well, we saw weaknesses. We saw a girl that desperately needs to work on some takedowns, desperately needs to work on some striking. She has the intangible. She has the chin. She has the motor. She has all that. It's just things that need to get cleaned up. And I think at 24, I'm not pushing the panic button yet. I think we're going to be okay, but she definitely has to shore some things up. Her best ability is to get the fight to the ground and get on top and smash. So she has to work on getting the fight to the ground. She looked very undersized and out and very weak compared to Manon. But other than that, I think the ceiling's still high. This is a setback, but also a wake-up call. And we've seen people, you know, come back stronger from this. And again, 24 years old, I like where she's at. But yeah, this is not a great look for her. It wasn't the best showing in five rounds.
And Kenny, the story very well may be Manon Fiore, and I promise you we're going to celebrate your $250 straight wager when we do get to place your bets. But dude, Erin Blanchfield was not tired at all after the first 20 minutes. You know, her coaching maybe in the corner at times left a little bit to be desired, according to some of what I read online. But she had plenty left to go on a fight she was clearly losing. And finally, the last thing out of his mouth was, you need a finish, right? But you just don't want to leave anything in the tank. And I feel like it's very much encouraging in terms of her cardiovascular base over 25 minutes. Went for it offensively most of the time, just couldn't have the answer or find the answer.
Yeah, 100%. Listen, Brian nailed that take. I think that for Blanchfield, you know, it's not time to panic at this stage of the game. She is still very young, still has a lot to learn in regards to the striking and wrestling, though. Is it one of these cases where, hey, I need a new coach? I don't know. Does it have to do with her development? You know, where she needs to kind of just put more time in certain areas. I don't know. I don't know the inner workings of their training camp and things like that. However, she does need to get sharper if she wants to be elite. Now, a lot of times results can be a deceiver. You know, just because you're winning doesn't necessarily mean you're doing the most optimal things out there. And that's what makes it so tricky based on how you're doing against your training partners, how you're doing against your previous opponents. I've talked about this all the time. I think I'm doing great. I'm killing the game, but no. You just haven't faced guys that are better than you. That's what it is. How do you find those guys in those different areas? And I think for Blanchfield, this is going to be one of those moments where she goes, okay, I need to get better at this. What do I need to change either with my own training or, you know, with my coaches or my training partners?
Brian Petrie, do you and your wife desire to travel internationally?
I mean, I've never left the country. No, I've been to Canada once. Sorry, when I was 18. But I mean, yeah, I mean, it's on the table always if life frees up. Yeah, sure.
Some people are really about it, right? Me, mm-hmm. No, not so much. I've right. certainly had that chance to do so with work. Kenny, when's the last time you left the United States of America?
Gosh,
for recreation. I'm not talking about for the PFL.
Oh, right. Yeah. So what?
Didn't you go to like fucking Turks and Caicos, right?
I went to Turks and Caicos. There you go, right? Yeah, October.
Looks like he's been to fucking Turks and Caicos, right? So, Brian, would you desire to go to Australia for a UFC pay-per-view?
I mean, the answer is, yeah. I have a lot of Australian guys DM me from this show. We have, they're the best fans in the world when it comes to MMA. Problem is, I'm not the best flyer. I don't like being trapped. Yeah. And that's a long flight. So I would need like to spend some cash on like I can't sit in the middle seat for 16 hours. I'll kill myself.
A lot of Australia guys sending you messages.
This guy wants to go to Australia to make out with a bunch of MMA fans.
You know? Especially since I did the shoey. They're like, mate, you know, I owe you a big, you know, it's great. But no, I mean, the 18 hour flight scares me, but it is a country I would like to explore. Sure.
Yeah. Mate, cool take place. A couple of fucking Zannies, fly to Perth. You can fucking mate with some of these Australian MMA fans. You know? Right. All right. So I just bring it up in the context of UFC 305 in Perth and that crowd for Islam Akhachev and Alexander Volkanovski at UFC 284, whatever it was one of the most special fight environment and atmospheres I've ever been a part of. Right. But the anxiety that courses through my veins when Perth gets announced as someone who is a Floridian, it's insane. So I don't think there are enough drugs in the world that could get me to by choice fly that far. Thankfully, it's such a hot ticket that that they sell out immediately anyway. All right. Got a couple of pronunciations of the week. First one's a Polish heavyweight who's competing coming up this weekend, Bri. Polish names are always tricky. Sure. And I'm bringing this file to the masses because I'm having a hard time with it myself. So why don't we start there, Bri, and then we'll move our way to La Jolla.
Sure. So, yeah, this is just going to be a typical dumb American phonetic pronunciation from your boy. I'm going to go Lukasz Brzeski.
All right. So it's spelled Brzeski.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear how Lukasz pronounces it. Listen carefully, folks.
Lukasz Brzeski. Lukasz Brzeski.
Man, a J on there. Jeski.
So, like, Joanna Young, Jacek, longtime Anakin Florian podcast listener, soon to be inducted UFC Hall of Famer. Like, what are we supposed to do? Maybe she was right all along that our mouths can't make that sound. It sounds like a D. It sounds like Lukasz Brzeski. So I'll be interested in what they go with on broadcast. And then the other one, Bri, is first name Ignacio. We've had this one before, La Jolla. Chilean fighter, super long, recently married, Bilal Muhammad's right-hand man, right?
Remember the name, Bilal Muhammad!
Ignacio's the first name, Bri. We need the whole thing, though.
I'm so glad you brought this name up, Johnny. This is just such a sexy name. I've said this before. Your mom used to grow up with those romance novels with Fabio on the cover. Don't get it twisted. That's mom porn, okay? They're getting sweaty listening to that. And I guarantee you the main character in that book was a guy named Ignacio with a dick the size of an elephant's trunk. Feasting, okay? And this name is sexy, and it's Ignacio Bahomandez.
That's good.
Ignacio La Jaula Bahomandez. Ignacio La Jaula Bahomandez.
Gorgeous.
That it H always, is silent.
Yeah, that H is silent. That's the public service announcement for this week for Ignacio Bahomandez. That H, you just kill it. It's Bahomandez. But I always find it interesting when I think about our listeners and viewers ingesting the pronunciation of the week, right? If somebody walks into the room as they're listening to just another man say Ignacio La Jaula Bahomandez. It's like, you can't find a better podcast. Is that the Joe Rogan Experience? What the fuck are you listening to? All right. Main event challenge, UFC Fight Night, Allen versus Curtis 2. How about your guy, the King of Combat, Chris Curtis, on the fucking poster, Bri? You nervous?
A little bit. I haven't reached out to him. I'll get to it when I break it down. I messaged him and go, listen, I don't care what it takes. I'm not bothering you, but I'm going to need one of those posters, my guy. You know, this is what I've been waiting for. He's on the poster. He's a main event. It's a big deal. But yeah, he's in good spirits, man. He's ready to go.
All right. Well, we're going to ease into it with some prelims. We'll start a lightweight with Longo's guy, Charlie Campbell, -225, taking on Trevor Peak, who is +185. So Campbell was a big favorite in his UFC debut against Alex Reyes and looked like a monster worthy of that designation. Now the Long Islander faces the madman, Trevor Peak. Bri, what do you think of this one?
This is a banger. I mean, this is going to be wild. Charlie Campbell, you know, I thought he looked good in the contenders. He was winning the Chris Duncan fight, then he got clipped, and then he debuted in the UFC, finished by knockout, and then had a cut a hell of a promo. This kid's confident. That tells me that he's in that gym at Longo's and he's doing well. You're not, you don't have this bravado. You're not arrogant. You're not cocky unless you're doing well in the gym. And that's a killer gym. And I like his tangibles. I like his skills. I like his striking's very crisp and he's big for the division and he has power. And you enter Trevor Peak. I mean, this guy just makes me laugh, right? There's no doubt in my mind he came out of his mother with that goatee on. That thing is just plastered on him. He cuts his own hair, guarantee it. This guy don't give a fuck, right? You know, he's wild. He scrambles. He gets hit a lot. He gets hurt a lot. And then he always finds that second, third, fourth gear. He's going to need to find that against Charlie Campbell here. I like Campbell big. -225 does not scare me. I think he's a cleaner striker. I think if it goes to the ground, I think he'll be okay. I think Trevor Peak is a tough guy. He's got some good things going for him, but it's really hard to learn on the job in the UFC. And I just don't think he's quite there yet, but he's very fun to watch. Give me Charlie Campbell.
Got that patented Ken Flo smirk going on right now.
No, here we go.
Oh, I'm just, I'm just laughing about Trevor Peak because he's one of these guys that, you know, if you're like a Brazilian jiu-jitsu blue belt and you think you're a badass, but by the way, Brazilian jiu-jitsu blue belt, they're the most dangerous land animals on the planet, by the way.
Yeah.
And you're out there and you're seeing Trevor Peak warm up and you're seeing him hit pads and you're like, I am going to destroy this guy. Yeah. And then he gets up and you're like, well, he's going to get tired, right? You're like, no, he's going to fight you to the death, as ugly as it may seem. He's going to fight you to the death. You are not beating him unless you're putting his lights out or you escape with a decision. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, Charlie Campbell, I think, is that dude. Earlier in the week, Longo gave him that beast stamp.
Yeah.
You know, nice. Longo doesn't throw those around. And there's no question. I mean, and Brian nailed it again. Charlie Campbell is by far the more technical striker. Now, does he have the conditioning? Yeah, I think he does have the conditioning. Does he have the experience at this point to beat a guy like Peak? I think he does. Where he could get in trouble is by underestimating his opponent. I don't think that's going to be the case here. I think he learned a hard lesson against Duncan in that contender series, as Brian talked about. And I just think Charlie's the better fighter. I think he's game as well. So long as he comes in here in tip-top shape, I think playing Charlie Campbell is the right pick here.
And he is the betting favorite. Peak did respond nicely after his first pro loss to Chepe Mariscal. Unanimous decision win for him last time out against Muhammad Yahya. We'll see how he does this weekend against Charlie Campbell. Maybe Longo's guys will just fucking go eye poke again this weekend and cheat their way to victory. All right. Valter, the clean monster walker. The clean monster, Bri. How about that nickname? He's a minus 345 betting favorite here as he arrives at the UFC debut against Lukasz Drzeski, plus 275. Drzeski, the Polish heavyweight, is 0-3 in the UFC thus far. Clean monster on the other side, 11-0 as a pro. Last win came in a Titan FC heavyweight title fight in Serbia against Alex Nicholson. That fight did go into a fourth round, by the way. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the clean monster here in the UFC debut, Brian Petrie? Go ahead.
So you got to be careful with these heavyweights, these debut heavyweights, because Val Walker looks like a monster. But when you enter the UFC and you get some of that testing under your belt, you know, you look a little different at times. So I don't want to go all in on Walker, and I'm not going to, you know, say anything bad about his name. But his stand up is troublesome. His chin's in the air. He's a big, strong dude. He likes to get the fight to the ground. Drzeski. He had trouble getting taken down by Carl Williams, right? He got up, his cardio is shaky, but he gets taken down and he gets beat up. I think that's what Walker's going to do here. Minus 345 scares me on a debutant heavyweight. But from the tape I've seen of him, he's pretty vicious when he gets you to the ground. Let's just hope he has cardio. I apologize. I'm getting a phone call. You can just erase that audio if you heard that. I like Walker. I like him probably to pound out Drzeski, unfortunately, but we'll see.
Kenfo, the clean monster, that would be a fun one to cap a fight with. He's minus 345 this weekend against Lukasz Drzeski, who's plus 275. Who do you like?
Yeah, Walker's a big dude, man. What, 6'5", 6'6"? He's undefeated, only 26 years old. And Johnny Walker's brother, did you see that last fight of Walker's? I was doing some video footage, and he's in there, and he literally starts fighting Johnny Walker after the fight. Like, they cheer. And Johnny Walker kind of goes to clinch with them. And then they're like, it's like this full on wrestling match. They break it up. They kind of go at it again. And there's this second. These guys are maniacs. Okay. The Walker brothers are complete maniacs. So I don't know, but he is a big kind of like strong wrestler type fighter. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what he's going to do here against Drzeski. He's going to try to take him down. And that's where Drzeski has been susceptible in the past. I think Drzeski is the better athlete, actually. I think he moves really well. I just think he needs more experience in regards to the grappling game. I'm still not sure exactly what I'm going to do here, because as Brian said, sometimes heavyweights, first fight in the UFC, how is it going to go down? There's some question marks there. But I am leaning towards Walker from a style perspective. If you have a style where you can take that guys down, control them, that tends to go well for you here against Drzeski. So I think Walker is the favorite for a reason.
All right, next fight for us, gentlemen, in the lightweight division, Nacho Ignacio Bahamondes, minus 340, taking on Christos Yagos, who is plus 270. So as you guys well know, Bahamonde is training under Mike Valley there in Chicago, gets a lot of rounds with Bilal Muhammad, still just 26 years old, a lot of UFC experience accrued already, 3-2, is coming off that loss to Ludovic Klein. That was last August 5th, and now he's the minus 340 favorite here, BP, against Christos Yagos. Your thoughts?
Yeah, sorry about that jingle earlier, guys. I feel like fucking Longo. Next thing I'm going to bring my dog in here, let him bark up the broadcast. Listen, Bahamonde, I love him. I love his skills. I think he's very good on the feet. I was a little disappointed with his takedown offense against Ludovic Klein, if I'm being honest with you. I think he was disappointed as well. Ludovic Klein is really rounding his game out. But before that, Bahamonde has looked really good stopping the takedown. Being a long-rangey guy, that's what people are going to want to do. And Yagos is going to want to do that to him as well. Yagos is durable. He's tough. He's hard to put away by knockout. He can't get choked out. He's been choked out before, but he's been there with some really elite guys. He's been around the UFC for a long time. 34 years old, so he's not super old, but he's a little long in the tooth for my liking in the UFC day, like the UFC ring. You know, he's been in there with a lot of people. I like Bahamonde here. The line is a little scary, if I'm being honest with you, but I think if it stays on the feet, Inacio is going to pick him apart. It's going to be a good night for him, and hopefully he can stop some takedowns because Yagos throws some bows. He throws some heavy shots. I mean, he knocked out our guy Ricky Glenn, so he can crack, but the size, the range, everything. Head kicks, I think, are going to be a big factor here for Bahamonde. I like him in this spot. I don't know if I like finish. I might play it on Saturday night if it's a good number, but give me Inacio.
Ken Flo on the other side. Christos Yagos, Killcliff FC, 31 pro MMA fights in a career that dates to 2010. Comes in here having lost three of his last four. Fought Daniel Zellhuber at Noche UFC last September. Lost that fight via Anaconda. Your thoughts on this one here, Inacio Bahamonde and Christos Yagos.
Yeah, this is a very interesting one, mainly because of what Brian talked about, which are the odds. Bahamonde at minus 340. I don't know if I'm going to play that one necessarily. Is he the favorite probably heading into that? Yeah, I think he's a fantastic striker. I think he's probably even into the upper echelon of strikers in that division as well. You know, how can you forget about that wheel kick against Roosevelt Roberts? One of the best knockouts I've seen. Anytime you can knock a dude out clean with a wheel kick in the UFC, that's extremely impressive. It shows a high level of skill, in my opinion. And so I think on the feet, I think he's going to get the better of Yagos for sure. But Christos, he's a good grappler as well. He can put guys on their backs. I think he can threaten you with position and submission. So I think, again, from a value perspective, Christos Yagos is interesting. He's got to deal with that reach. He's got to deal with that length. I mean, Bahamonde is 6'3", and Yagos being only 5'10", you see that, like, it's about a 4-inch reach difference as well. To get on the inside against an elite striker who moves well like Bahamonde is not going to be easy. So for that reason, I think Bahamonde is the favorite. I'm leaning his way for sure. But don't count out Christos Yagos.
All right, next fight for us at featherweight, Morgan Charrier, minus 148. Chepe Mariscal is plus 124. So the last pirate, Morgan Charrier out of France, had a big knockout win in his UFC debut, got bonus that night. Tremendous record, at least on paper, as a finisher, going for five straight wins here against Chepe Mariscal. Machine Gun Mariscal, friend of the program, odds to fire, chasing a 3-0 UFC start here. And not surprised to see a plus number next to Chepe Mariscal again here, Bri. What do you think about him here against Morgan Charrier?
Yeah, Charrier is a guy I have my eye on for a little bit. I don't really reach out too much in the France regional MMA scene, but it was a guy that caught my eye because, you know, he has personality, has good striking. He's got a good record. He's beat some good guys. He's lost to some good guys. A little surprised it took him a while to get to UFC, but when he fought a debut in France in front of that crowd, was electric. I think he has all the recipes to be a really good standout fighter. Exciting as well with his striking. It's very clean. But Chepe, I know John doesn't play favorites. John can't. Legally, contractually, he can't play favorites. But he loves him some Chepe Mariscal. He loves him some Chepe. Chepe's just a dog, right? I was all over Jack Jenkins in that fight. I thought Jack Jenkins was going to kick the leg. I thought he was cleaner. I thought he was going to stop the takedowns. Chepe goes, nah, fuck that. I'm going to run through this dude. I'm going to bully ball him, and I'm going to get it done. Chepe's, a lot of his losses are kind of ugly if you look at his record, but those kind of happened earlier. The confidence is building. This is a full-time job. He's all in. And when you got a guy all in who can get a little ugly in there, a little fucking dog in him, I'm going to go the dog every time with an underdog play at Chepe Maniscalco, plus 124. I like him there. I wouldn't be surprised if this is fight of the night. I think Charrier could look really good in round one. But what's round two and round three? Because I know Chepe ain't going anywhere. So give me Chepe, baby.
Kenflo Chepe Maniscalco was an underdog on short notice, up a division at lightweight against Trevor Peak. He beat him, and then he beat Jack Jenkins. It was a TKO due to injury, but that was another underdog spot for Chepe, and trying to produce a third time here against Morgan Charrier. Your thoughts on this one, Kenny Florian?
Yeah, Charrier is going to be the more technical striker. I think there's no question about that. I think how he deals with Maniscalco in the clinch is going to be the question mark. You know, can he clinch fight him? Can he deal with pacing and pressure that Chepe is going to bring? I'm not sure. But I do think that Charrier has got some serious skills that, you know, is not really indicative of that 19-9-1 record. I think he is very skillful. I think he's very dangerous. I think that if he's able to keep Chepe on the outside, it's actually going to be a pretty easy fight. I don't think he's going to be able to do that the whole fight, though, just because of the gameness in Maniscalco. So I don't know. I'm leaning towards Charrier here. I do see some value. This is a close fight odds-wise. But I don't know. I think Morgan's going to be ready here. But it should be a very, very fun fight while it lasts.
And you don't have to make a prediction. You only have to make a pick on the main event per longtime Major League Baseball all-star third baseman Evan Longoria. All right.
No pressure.
So did you guys see how happy Joaquin Buckley was that he was on the poster last weekend?
Yes. That was awesome.
It's a big deal. You know, motion for all co-main event athletes to be featured on these UFC Fight Night posters, right? It's a really big thing. Certainly, most athletes are able to keep those posters that are signed by all the athletes. But as a co-headliner, to get on a poster, it's a big deal. And I bring it up in the context of this weekend's co-main event because I don't think Alexander Hernandez and Damon Jackson are on the poster. Well, wouldn't it be nice for DJ, right? Two, three, UFC since, oh, BP knows. You've already seen the fucking poster.
No,
is that right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm trying to get my hands on it. He ain't on it. No.
All right. So, but you know, wouldn't it be nice for Damon Jackson, right? 12th UFC appearance. I don't think he's had co-main event status before to potentially be on the poster. Either way, he's the plus 164 underdog this weekend. Alexander Hernandez is minus 198. He is 6-6 in the UFC. And Hernandez, a lot of potential still, right? Not an old man, just a little uneven the last couple of years. Had the big win over Jim Miller last February, then lost to Bill Algeo last time out. What do you think about Hernandez here, Bri, about a 2-1 favorite against DJ?
Yeah, this fight, it's a tricky fight. I want to kind of maybe brag a little bit about myself. Can I do that? Can I put the humble shield down? Damon Jackson was a favorite against Ilir Topuria, and I cashed up big on that one. Okay, I just want to say that. No knock on Damon Jackson, just I saw the skill in Topuria. Damon Jackson's, this is a guy who's just super inconsistent, and so is Alex Hernandez. Is Hernandez a 55er? Is he a 45er? What are we doing with the weight? You're bouncing up and down. All this inconsistent movement. He's explosive. He's powerful. But that's really it. You know, he kind of sometimes gets stuck in mud. And Damon Jackson has surprised me. I did not think he would go on a run that he did. He's fought some killers in there. Cardio elite. His takedowns are really good for being as long as he is. Usually it's rare to see a guy as long as him with some good takedowns. His jiu-jitsu is pretty good. And his stand-up's good. My only issue is his durability. He gets rocked a little bit. He gets put down a little bit. Hernandez has the big power and can put him down. I think Damon Jackson has all the skills to win, and this is a really good underdog play for anybody that wants to play the underdog. I'm just unsure. I don't really want to put my money on two guys that are really kind of inconsistent, don't know who they're going to show up. I mean, is this the Alex Hernandez who fought Benny Dariush and knocked him out within, you know, a minute or whatever? Is that who's going to show up? I don't know. But I'm going to take Hernandez. I think the power is going to make the difference here. But if cardio plays a factor and this extends, Damon Jackson, you know, he can dig deep in second or third round. I think it's a really good live bet for a guy like Damon Jackson, who's probably going to be right around plus money again. But I'm going to go Hernandez for the power.
Ken Flo, Alexander Hernandez's last winning streak, as in two UFC wins in a row, was all the way back in 2018. And Damon Jackson also needs a win direly, right? Back-to-back losses against Dan Ige and Billy Quarantillo. So huge showcase co-main event spot for a couple of featherweights that really need a win. Ken Flo, you got a prediction for us on this one or what?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, both these guys are not on you know, both have losing streaks right now. So it's tough. When I get two guys that are relatively close in skill level, I'm probably going to defer to the guy who's the better athlete. Who is that? That's Hernandez. I think that this is a potential loser goes home match. So there's a lot on the line for both these guys. It's hard to tell. This is one of those when like Brian said, you have two guys that are very inconsistent in their performances. It's hard to pick one of these guys with a whole lot of confidence, but I'm leaning towards Hernandez, like I said, because I do think he's probably the better athlete.
All right. Main event live at the Apex this weekend. Brendan Allen trying to keep it going as a minus 205 betting favorite, taking on the Action Man, the King of Combat, Chris Curtis, who is plus 170. So Curtis stepping in here for an injured Marvin Vettori. This fight figured to have tremendous appeal to Brendan Allen because, as many of you know, Chris was the last man to beat him late 2021. And now Brendan Allen is on the cusp of a world title shot. He has won six in a row, five of them by rear naked choke. And yet just a modest 2-1 favorite here this weekend against your guy, Chris Curtis. If you don't know, Brian Petrie's closest relationship with any fighter on this active roster is with Chris. So we will keep that in mind. It's the 43rd pro walk for your guy, Chris Curtis. How do you think he handles this main event against Brendan Allen?
I'm so glad he got this opportunity. I have a Chris Curtis shirt I was going to wear. I was looking all over for it. Look at my wife's like, she's wearing it. So I couldn't wear it to rep on the show for my guy. Chris Curtis and I go back for forever. I've sparred over 100 rounds with the guy. Love him to death. I love this opportunity for him. He took the Brendan Allen first fight on short notice, taking this one on relatively short notice. I mean, he doesn't get a full camp, but he's always training. He's in shape. He's ready to go. And I love his mental. I love where his mind's at for this. This is going to be a different fight. The first round was very competitive. Chris outstruck him, but Brendan fell off a little bit. I rewatched that first fight a lot, and I feel like you can just kind of see the shift after the first round. You kind of knew Brendan might have been like, oh shit, this guy's for real. I took him on short notice. And then, you know, you go and you box a guy like Chris, you throw hands with him, hands for hands. You might not win that all the time. I mean, Chris has had 41 pro fights. He's only been finished twice. Once by Tom Galiglio way back in the day by rear naked choke. And then Ray Cooper clipped him with a punt knockout. Other than that, he's durable as they come. He's a 5-round merchant. Before the UFC, every fight he had was 5 rounds. He's winning titles left and right. Finally got in the UFC. Brendan Allen, similar. He had 5 rounds a lot in the LFA as well. He's won some, he's lost some. So I see this fight going 5 rounds. I see this. If someone's going to win by finish, I like Chris. I know that's crazy for people to say because Brendan Allen's such a finisher. I think Brendan Allen's a different fighter. He's looked amazing. His head kick is good. I think going to be a play a factor here. I think he needs to copy what Jack Hermansa did. Throw head kick, strike on the outside. He's the bigger guy. Circle around. Chris is going to get caught up in the footwork because he marches forward. Chris is going to need to put Brendan Allen's back foot. And Brendan Allen went for some takedowns the first fight. I don't know if he's going to go for a lot of takedowns. Chris is harder to take down. Why waste your energy? And I love Chris in a 5-round fight because he's always a slow starter. He gets on himself for being a slow starter. I'm a slow starter. That's in 3 rounds. He can start slow and build and let those body shots do the work for him. I knew he was going to be underdog in this spot. I love the plus money on Chris. I know I'm super biased. The chat's going to hammer me. Brendan Allen's a great dude. These dudes are friendly now. They're like buddies now after they fought. Yeah. They both are arguing about who's going to wear the purple shorts. I love it, right? It's going to be a competitive fight. It's going to be awesome. I love Chris getting the main event. When I met Chris forever ago and I saw the talent, I knew he's going to make it to UFC. And all he said is, I want a main event in UFC. That was something that was a goal. He said it after his last fight at the press conference. Right. He's getting in here against a rematch of a very competitive 6th-ranked middleweight who's on fire right now that he's got to win over. I love it. Sorry for being long-winded, but obviously I'm taking Chris Curtis.
I think only thing working against you is just Ken Flo furiously taking notes throughout your prediction. Brendan Allen, modest 205, Chris Curtis, plus 170. Ken Flo, pretty interesting main event here. Curtis has a style that, as Brian mentioned, seems to play well over 5 rounds. He's been jonesing for this main event forever. It comes with some circumstances here, but dude, Brendan Allen, to me, looks like one of the most dangerous middleweights in the world. And on any given Saturday night, I think he's the most dangerous grappler in this division. What are your thoughts on Allen and Curtis under the lights here Saturday night?
This is a very intriguing fight. And when I look at the skill sets of both men, I go, well, I think Allen's the more technical guy. I look at the frame. I think Allen, 6'2", 75-inch reach. Chris Curtis, only 5'10". Allen's got a lot of advantages here. except for one. I'm not sure he's the more powerful striker. Chris Curtis can finish the fight with one strike. That's a concern for me, mainly because sometimes Brendan Allen takes a wake-up call to kind of get back into a fight, and sometimes I see some mental lapses in his game where he's doing great, and all of a sudden there's one mistake, a scary moment, and he allows his opponent maybe into the fight for a brief moment. I think a lot of those issues have been largely fixed from Brendan Allen, but that one still kind of is a concern, especially when he's taken on a dangerous guy like Chris Curtis, who I think tends to shine when he's an underdog, when he's kind of counted out a little bit. And here, you know, not a huge underdog, but an underdog nonetheless. And he has this main event spot. And I think that Chris is going to gain a lot of confidence from being in this moment, I think. And Brendan Allen should as well. He's got a lot of momentum on his side right now. But and I'm picking Allen here, because I do think he's the better fighter, but I'm a little nervous. I'd be a little nervous putting money on Brendan Allen at this point because of that. I think Chris is a tough guy to finish as of late. And I think when it gets into rounds 4 and 5, that's where I think a lot of guys who are picking Brendan Allen, their hands will start to sweat in rounds 4 and 5 because Chris kind of comes alive at that point. So, yeah, very interesting main event here.
All right, that does it for the main event challenge. We will soon get to place your bets, but I just want to let you guys know next week for UFC 300, Pineda versus Hill, you will be making 13 selections. We are probably going to have a clock, so we're going to have 60 minutes for that exercise and then however much time you need for place your bets. But you're going to have a full hour for the main event challenge next week. Nice. So we know it's going to be a lot of homework, and you can start that immediately. Place your bets sponsored by JohnAnik.com, where you can get 20% off your entire merchandise order with promo code OneMoreSleep. All right, Ken Flo's lead was north of $1,100. Here's how it played out last week. Petrie was at minus 515.67 on the year. He put his entire 1K on Ruzhaboyev. That paid $359.71. Shaves your nut down to year-to-date, minus 155.96. Ken Flo was plus $613 and change. Massive $250 straight wager hit on Manon Fiore as an underdog. That paid $410 as she was plus 164. You also had 300 straight on Chidi Njokuani, 300 straight on Ruzhaboyev. Only miss was the parlay that included Bill Algeo. So Ken Flo makes $544.38 on the week. Year to date, plus $1,157.93. The Team Florian lead, $1,313.89. Brian Petrie, yes. You have $1,000 to spend. UFC Fight Night, Allen versus Curtis 2. We go on a G on Curtis? What are we doing?
Should I shove it? No, I can't. I can't. I'm going to spread the money out a little bit. There's a lot of spots to like. I'm going to take Charlie Campbell for $400. Charlie Campbell, $400. And okay. Then give me this, just the sexy Ignacio Bahamondes for another $200. A little, I do think he's going to win that fight. And then, you know what? Give me that old dog, Chepe Maniscalco for plus 142 for $200. And then I know Chris is a nice little juicy plus 170, but I think we're going to get a better price if he wins by knockout, which is how I see him winning. So give me Curtis by knockout. The props not available yet. I'll obviously get that number to you. $200 for that as well.
Look at this guy. Nicely done spreading out the $1,000. All right, Ken Flo, really hitting them fucking straight and sharp these last few weeks, man. Yeah. You know, really, really just on a fucking tear. Homework paying off. How we spending a G this weekend, brother?
My goodness. It's amazing what happens when you reduce your other responsibilities. You can actually watch more video footage. Okay, so I like Charlie Campbell pretty big here as well. I'm going $500 on Campbell.
Nice.
I'm taking a risk here. I mean, Mariscal has burned me. And I like him as a fighter, but I just think Charrier is good. I think people are sleeping on him. So give me $400 on Charrier.
Okay, leaves you $100.
Yeah, and let's go with these parlays here again. $100 okay. Parlay. Let's go with Campbell. Campbell
You Walker. Take your time. Campbell, Walker.
Campbell, Walker, and Allen.
And Allen. Yeah. All right. Nicely done. At Brian Petrie MMA, if you want to follow his content. Brian, we will talk to you for the Power Hour in advance of UFC 300 next Monday, my man.
I can't wait. I got the whole week off of work. I'm coming prepared, boys. Can't wait. Thanks,
Wear
boys.
A seatbelt. Brian Petrie with us for the main event challenge. And place your bets here on the Anakin Florian podcast. And just like that, another week is in the can. All hands on deck for UFC 300 coming up next Monday. We'll probably have a full 2-hour show for you on Monday. We'll try to get you those picks as soon as humanly possible. And just can't wait to shake Ken Flo's hand. You know, give him one of those fucking man hugs in Vegas, you know?
Brothers don't shake hands. Brothers hug.
And yeah. I need you. We got it all. The girls love us. We're like wham.
All right, that's going to do it for today. Thanks to our executive producer, Cody Merrow. Thanks to Brian Petrie. For Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Don't forget to check out johnanik.com. One More Sleep merchandise is up for UFC 300. Get it in time for the live event. Promo code is One More Sleep for 20% off. For Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. We will talk to you next Monday, which will be fight week for UFC 300. Until then, be well, stay healthy, go fucking late.
He's the open man. He's cornbread.
Cornbread.
He's cornbread.
Cornbread.
He's cornbread.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family. Same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.